I got stuff for you.
Holy moly. I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But they love eating people. They love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. Seen a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree?
Welcome back to Cryptids of Corn Podcast. I am the great and powerful Mystery.
And I'm J-Clone 61.
Ooh. And today, we're going to talk about Tsukinoko? Is that how you say it? Tsukinoko?
I said Tsukinoko.
Tsukinoko?
I don't know what's right. One of those two.
Tsukinoko.
Yeah, Tsukinoko.
The dirt child, or the child of the hammer.
What? That's what it translates to?
Yeah.
Really?
So if anybody didn't know what the Tsukinoko is, it's a very popular, and it's considered a yokai in Japan.
Yeah, it's a Japanese,
monster.
Cryptid? I mean, cryptid, it's a cryptid, monster. Yeah.
It's yokai has kind of walked the line.
I mean, this is cryptids of the corn, so I guess we are discussing cryptids.
Yeah, yokai is just, it can be anything from demons to your umbrella that lived for 110 years and gained a soul to a snake that's been hit with a hammer.
It got hit with a hammer?
That's kind of what the name translates to, because its body's super flat. So if anybody didn't know, this is a snake from Japan. We'll get into it fully. There's not a ton of it in English I could find, so if you have more, please set it out. But I think I know what the Tsukinoko is.
Okay. I can tell you where I first learned of this creature, because I actually know of this. I know of this this one before we even did the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Where?
You want me to tell you now?
Yeah.
I learned about it from the game Metal Gear Solid, particularly Metal Gear Solid 3. You can capture a Tsukinoko. And, but you have to, it has like weird qualities to it too. So like, it doesn't act like any of the other animals in the game. Like it doesn't show up on thermal, like your thermal goggles. You don't see it.
That's a reptile.
Yeah, true. But like even the other stuff like lizards and stuff, it'll show up like just a little bit, but this one doesn't. But the only way you can capture it. And if you capture it and you keep it alive in your inventory, the whole game and beat the game, you get like a face paint. At the end, like a little bonus face paint.
Of the Tsukinoko?
Yeah, the Tsukinoko. It's kind of cool, though, so you can capture it, and you can look at it in inventory and like see like the size and the weight, and it gives a little description of it. So that's where I first learned about it. I'm like, what the heck is this thing? I thought it was real at first. Well, it is real. You know, it is real.
So this is what I do believe is real.
Yeah.
And I think I know what it is.
Okay.
And I looked and looked and looked, and a cousin of what I think it is gets put up there as a possibility, but a lot of people don't. And it doesn't fit quite. So the Tsukinoko is supposedly a snake-like creature with an extremely large head, a thin neck, and then a large flat body that ends in a little stumpy tail.
Mm.
But we'll talk about that. Yeah, and the name Tsukinoko roughly translates to English as dirt child or the child of the hammer.
Yeah.
It's snake-like cryptid from the mountainous regions of western Japan. It has been reported in all regions of Okinawa and Hokkaido.
Yeah.
Through the Honshu, Shako, Kunsi periods.
Okay. So different eras, basically. Yeah,
it's been reported for a long time.
Yes. Because that's how Japan, they kind of separate their eras by their ruler, like whoever's in power like at that time.
They're also reported, so they're reported between 30 and 80 centimeters long. So not very big.
That's pretty small.
Like 10 to probably 25 inches, somewhere in there.
This is a short, flat, fat snake.
Mm-hmm. The name is used in Western Japan, however, is known as the Baki Haida in Northeastern Japan.
Okay.
So same kind of thing, different name. In total, though, this creature has over 50 plus names over Japan.
Oh, wow.
Well, they'll draw the same thing, but it's different names. Although there are some consistent features in various sightings, the Tsuchinoko is widely regarded as looking very wide, like a common snake, just, you know, flattened, with its central girth being wider than its head and its tail. Large plate-like scales run down its body.
Okay.
Make that very, very clear. Unlike a lot of the snakes of Japan and China and, you know, Asia, this snake is reported to have extremely large plate or armor-like scales that run down the length of its body.
Okay.
It's reported to have fangs and venom similar to any of the common snakes of Japan. According to the website of Akari City, the municipality where the Tsuchinoko was sighted, there are two types of Tsuchinoko, type A and type B. Type A has a long torso, large round eyes, and a kind face, low leaping ability, and vertically standing behavior. So it'll stand up.
Like a cobra?
Yeah, like a cobra. Some lizards will do that and stuff like that, whether it's to make themselves look bigger or to see what's around and stuff like that.
Or cats looking out a window will do that.
Type B is short, leaps extremely high, and squeals like a pig.
Oh, great. That's pretty, I mean, that's a little bit different.
The Tsuchinoko reportedly rolls often, sometimes biting their own tail and spinning around like the North American hoop snake. Now, these are very important. When I was reading this, I'm like, I know what this is.
Like behaviors?
I know what it looks like, it bothered me. Nobody put this out there.
Well, that's what this show is for.
They sometimes roll vertically and sideways or in straight lines, like a hoop snake. The Tsuchinoko is considered to have a very high leaping ability, often described as a 3-foot leap, which for an animal of their size is, you know, quite high.
Yeah, well, for a snake in general.
I guess it depends on what you're considering a leap for a snake. So the rule, like a strike, like the whole body of the snake's not leaving the ground, but it is leaping towards you.
Okay.
A lot of snakes can leap 1/3 of their total body length, but when you're talking about like cobras and stuff like that, you know, if it's a 16-foot long snake,
it's pretty far.
It's still a huge, you know, it's instantly on top of you.
Yeah.
But there are even other snakes that can, you know, do half their body length in a coiled, you know, leap. So I guess it really is breaking down, what are you calling a leap? Like, you mean the whole body of the animal is flying up?
That's what I'm picturing.
And, yeah, that's kind of what I'm picturing with these guys, because they're so little.
Like, hop,
but more hop. Like flinging itself.
Yeah. You would think a snake, I mean, just a little side tangent, though. Like you said, if it launches its whole upper half out, you think it could retract its back half towards its upper half, like we pull our legs in?
There's some snakes that can fling themselves.
That'd be interesting to see.
There's some lizards that do it, too, just to get away.
Yeah.
Because it's the weird movement. It's to confuse predators.
Yeah.
And a lot of animals would do that, specifically the group of animals I think this animal belongs to.
It's like when, you
know, the whole thing is to confuse predators.
Like when you get in a conversation with somebody and then they start like moonwalking in front of you and you're just like
it's hard to be mad.
Yeah. Like, and you just, it's confusing and you just leave.
There are other descriptions of this creature being able to leap up to 5 meters, though.
That's pretty far.
3 feet to 5 meters.
Yeah. That's
depending on who you're talking
to. That's a big jump.
This feature has never been mentioned in the sightings, though. So there is Chrissy Shakatan wrote on the web article, some people claim that the Tsuchinoko has the ability to speak. But even if you meet a talking Tsuchinoko, they are not to be trusted. Apparently, Tsuchinoko are known to lie. So some people say that when they speak, it's just you can't understand them, but they're talking.
Yeah.
Other people say that they talk, you know, in Japanese, but don't trust them because they're liars.
Gotcha.
Which is a common trait in a lot of yokai. That they have, like, weird rules to them.
Yeah.
Where it's like Tsuchinoko always lie.
Right, yeah. You don't trust them.
It's also said they have a taste for alcohol.
Ooh, okay.
This property is commonly known that it's used to trap and capture Tsuchinoko. But in this kind of folklore, there's been no sightings of Tsuchinoko consuming alcohol. Most people believe this is an added thing, especially in modern culture.
Okay.
Because a lot of the other yokai get offerings of alcohol, cream, that kind of, you know, depends on which thing you're talking about.
And these things.
Yokai are very hard when you're comparing to, like, U.S. stuff. because of the term yokai encompasses what we would call here in cryptids, like flesh and blood, like the halfway state where some of us talk about like Bigfoot and Dogman maybe big.
Yeah.
And the purely spiritual.
Yeah.
Yokai encompasses
all of it.
It's the word for the paranormal is strange, I guess, is strange beings.
Okay.
Would be how I kind of describe yokai, whether that's 100% accurate or not. I'm not an expert in Japanese yokai.
Just how it, in your head, that's how it works.
Yes. The Tsuchinoko is extremely popular and a well-known cryptid in Japan, just like the Kappa. This is, you know, a fan favorite. There's Tsuchinoko backpacks, keychains, you know, days.
Like I said, it was in Metal Gear Solid. Like that's,
it is kind of popular here in the U.S. You see Tsuchinoko art and, you know, toys and all kinds of stuff. With many residents believing in the existence and claim to have seen one throughout their life. Hmm. On May 3rd, the annual Tsuchinoko Festival is held in, it's in Gifu Prefect, how do you say that?
Prefecture. Can I see it?
Yeah.
I'll probably pay it.
Okay. That big, long H word.
Oh, gosh. Higashishirakawa in Gifu Prefecture.
Where the roots of the local legend can be traced. The festival participates in a Go Tsuchinoko hunting with a 1.2 million yen
reward whoever
for anyone
gets
who
one.
Can find one, which in a USD is about $11,500.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, nobody's claimed it yet.
Not yet.
People have brought snakes and salamanders and stuff like that.
They roll them out with a rolling pin and like,
yeah,
here you go. It's not jumping anymore, but
I mean, I don't want to ruin it, but some animals have large flat heads and bodies that live in Japan that get 5 feet long.
Uh-oh.
The government of Yoshi once offered a 20 million yen reward for anybody to successfully capture a Tsuchinoko, which is roughly $200,000 in US. In June of 1984, a man named Noda and his wife reported having come across a huge snake with a thick body like that of a beer bottle and the head described as being that of a tortoise.
Hmm. Okay.
A big, thick, robust body with a head like a tortoise.
Yeah.
And the best word he could come up with is a snake or serpent.
Mm-hmm.
On May 8th in 2000, a farmer named Sujai reported having come across two metallic colored snakes with tails like rats. Some of the depictions do give them like a little pigtail, like a tiny little tail after.
Huh.
In the same year in June, a woman named Moshiko reported that the Tsuchinoko was swimming across the river. She described in her experience as the following. I was extremely surprised. I just pointed at it and asked, "Who are you? Who are you?" It didn't answer me, but just stared at me. It had a round face, and it didn't take its eyes off me. I can still see those big eyes. They were big and round, and they looked like they were floating in the water itself. I've lived over here for 80 years, but I've never seen anything like this in my life.
80? Goodness.
And once again, that's translated from Japanese to English. So,
yeah.
You know, Google always breaks some of this
stuff.
Could
be 18.
No, I think the 80 years is right. Oh, she was just, you know, elderly woman walking by the river every day.
Yeah. Maybe she saw a kappa.
She could have. Yeah. Kappa reported having really tiny eyes, though.
Oh, do they? Yeah. Okay, I can't remember.
Yeah, really, really tiny. But tortoise-like head, sure, but really tiny eyes.
Yeah.
One notable case involves a farmer allegedly spotting a Tsuchinoko while cutting grass. He describes it as having a face similar to that of a Doberman. A Doberman?
Doberman.
No, not the dog.
Oh.
It's a popular Japanese cartoon character.
Oh. I don't know what this is.
I should have looked it up. Adoramon.
All right. I'll look it up while you're reading.
He reported having injured it with his weed whacker before the creature made its escape. So he accidentally hurt it.
Okay.
He was cutting his grass with his weed whacker. He had it hurt it, and then this face popped out.
Okay.
And he's like, ah.
There, that's Doraemon. That little.
Oh, the big wide head, the little cat thing. Robot thing.
Yeah.
After a few days, though, an old woman discovered its dead body lying by the side of the stream and buried it. Not realizing how important it was, she felt bad for the little yokai.
Mm.
So he did end up killing it. When the word eventually got around, the local government sent a team to dig it up in the local university for examination. The professor who examined the creature said it had been a Tsuchinoko, but scientifically speaking, it was a kind of snake. Many other bodies and shed skins have been found, but most of them are thought to be known species of snake.
Mm, okay.
A sudden rise in sightings caused the Tsuchinoko boom, where it was caused by some books being published on searches of this particular creature. The most famous one is called, now the English translation is Runaway Tsuchinoko, which is a book about the author of it and his team and the sightings and incidents he investigated involving the Tsuchinoko. Before this, old people started talking about the snake. Even if you saw a Tsuchinoko, it was taboo, and you were not supposed to talk about it because you'd believe you'd be cursed.
Huh. So, I mean, you see you have the discovery or you have it happen, but you're not allowed to speak of it.
Mm-hmm. Before this, he's talking in the book, like, yeah. That was the old way of thinking.
Right, exactly, yeah.
And then you kind of say the same thing with Bigfoot.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Not that you'd be cursed, but people would make fun of you, not believe, like, you'd be a social outcast.
Which is a curse. I mean, kind of. It's similar effect.
All right, so I have theories of what the Tsuchinoko could be.
Okay, is that basically, like, our basic lore?
Yeah, that's
foundation?
Yeah. And okay. There's more. If anybody wants to send me some stuff about the Tsuchinoko, I'll do a full episode, a big episode on it. But I think I know what it is, but there are other people who put up ideas of what it could be. So do you want to guess?
Well, first, I'll guess, and then you'll do what they could be, and then we'll do what you know it is.
I always end on what I know it is.
Yeah, I know. But I don't know. I'm trying to break it down. I don't want to burst your bubble. I hope I don't guess what you think it is.
I doubt you know what this animal is.
I don't know. I'm pretty good at it. Well, my first guess was going to be some kind of like salamander.
So that is listed. That is not what I believe it is.
Okay.
I misled you. So let's talk about that since you just mentioned that.
Yeah.
The giant Japanese salamander has been put up here, especially in areas where it's been rare or its population is reduced.
Yeah.
The Tsuchinoko kind of does look like it, depending on which description. They have the big wide head, they have a little neck, and a big wide flat body.
Right.
Very stumpy animals. Depending on where you see them, you cannot see their legs from the top.
Like if you see them in the water?
Or even when they're walking on land a little bit.
Okay.
They kind of hold their legs under them because they don't want to be on land.
Gotcha.
Their body's not really designed. They can do it for short distances, especially younger individuals.
Okay.
When you get to the 5 or 6 footers, it's very hard for them to do that. But, you know, when you're talking about the 2 footers, which is a lot of the Tsuchinoko sightings.
Right.
They will cross land, they'll cross rocks, they'll cross like sidewalks and stuff to get to more water. So that could be some of these sightings. They're the right color. They don't have the big scales, though. They will leap.
Yeah, true.
They will leap like an alligator, especially when they're young, as like a defense mechanism.
Okay.
So they can be very scary if you don't know what you're looking at, because all of a sudden there's this giant mouth
swinging at you. Yeah.
I don't believe that's at least most of the sightings.
Okay.
But that is an option that gets put out there a lot. But I do think there's probably a handful of the sightings that are probably giant Japanese salamander juveniles or maybe some other amphibian. We've talked about Japan actually has a high diversity of really unique wildlife.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, I mean, it's tropical in the south and it's snowing all the time in the north and you have every kind of habitat in between.
Right.
So, you know, you get the produce. They have wolves and bears and giant salamanders and they have venomous snakes.
Hmm. Well, I had another thought of what it could be potentially. Mm-hmm. Now, we've mentioned it on a previous episode of Grips of the Corn. I don't remember if it was on a regular
sure.
or if it was on Patreon, but remember mentioning in the mountains of Japan, I think it was the Mongolian death worm episode.
No, it was giant earthworms.
Giant earthworms, yep.
Yeah, so that's actually a similar place where this is.
That was my second guess.
The Tsuchinoko. So the episode, I don't remember now if it's Patreon or main show,
yeah.
But it's giant earthworms from around the world because
okay.
South America has one, Japan
yep.
has one,
yep.
and Australia has one. And we talked about the actual giant earthworms. Like there's some 6 and 7 foot earthworms and some even get 10 foot here in North America. They're almost extinct, but
yep, they're still there.
Yeah, you can find a 10 foot long, you know, 3 inch thick worm.
Yeah, big fat. Like those giant gummy worms, but you ever seen the giant ones? Mm-hmm. It's like 4 foot, 3 foot long, like that, but it's to scale.
So that could be it. I'm going to push back against it just because people are very adamant about the eyes and about the definable head versus body. So the worms, though, are in Japan. But they are very classically described as, people even say they're corrugated. Like
the worms.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember the one giant worm from the farm in Japan? He thought it was a water tile had busted up.
Yeah.
And he ran out and it was this giant worm that slid back in the ground.
That's nuts. That would be so cool to see.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a cryptid. Besides, the South American one is very aggressive, but the Japanese one generally isn't if you don't mess with it.
Mm-hmm.
So no, I mean, not saying it can't be like a juvenile giant, a Japanese giant earthworm, but it, I don't think it is, just because of the definable characteristics. People right. that have been seeing this for hundreds of years are very adamant that the two types, you know, quote unquote, that people see always kind of describe, though, that big flat head,
right,
a neck,
and then
and body. Then the big flat body.
Yep.
It's not one like a slug.
Right.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
I understand it completely. Okay, I'm trying to cycle through any other options. I mean, another option, just a hoop snake. It is a hoop snake.
There you go. So let's talk about the first big one that I have.
Okay.
A lot of people say this is probably just misidentification of common snakes. Specifically, okay. Snakes that have just had an extremely large meal.
Hmm.
So snakes will swallow their prey whole.
Yep.
They'll get a giant bulge in their middle. They'll have a short, stumpy tail, because snakes actually don't have a long tail. People don't realize that.
Yeah, right.
They have a long middle part of their body.
Yes, their tail is actually pretty...
Very small, especially male snakes.
But they do have a tail. Snakes. But they do have a tail.
Female snakes have a very, very tiny little tail.
Yeah.
So if you have a snake, let's say, you know, a moderate-sized 3-foot snake that has eaten a rabbit, for example,
mm-hmm.
it would look absolutely massive. It'd have a tiny little neck and then its big, wide head.
Have you ever seen the book, or I know they made like a... television or like a animated, I think, I don't know if it was a movie or a little series, but The Little Prince, or in French, it's a French book. It's called Le Petit Prince. You ever heard of that?
Mm-mm.
Well, at the very beginning, they talk about this snake, and it's basically, they described it as they said in the book, like a chapeau, a hat. It looks like a hat, but it's a snake. I'm going to show you a picture right here.
Okay.
This is in the book. This is what
good radio.
I know. But it's Le Petit Prince. If you Google Le Petit Prince snake, so they said it looks like a hat, or it looks like a snake ate a tiny elephant. But that's a snake.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of sounds like what you're describing a little bit. The Tsuchinoko.
Where is this at?
Le Petit Prince. It's a French book.
Oh, so it's not real?
No, it's not. It's just like a story about like this little kid basically that goes to all these different planets, and all the planets are like have their own separate world
ecosystems.
And, yeah, and but that's what he saw snake.
So that could be something very similar to where, but a viper's normally, which Japan has some vipers, have a big wide head.
Yeah,
because their venom glands and their jaws, and that so this is when snakes feel very threatened too, and this could be why that when they're seeing the Tsuchinoko swimming, it can't dive.
Ooh, okay.
It's because they start building up gas. So even green anacondas will be forced to be at the surface when this happens.
When they're stressed.
Like when they're digesting.
Oh, when they're, away.
So if it has a large piece of prey in it and it's building up gas, it can't dive, it's stressed. So this is where they'll turn and leap and they'll show fangs and stuff like that because they're a lot slower.
Yeah.
And they just feel a lot vulnerable. More vulnerable. Yeah. So they lash out a lot more.
Gotcha.
So this is when typically docile vipers and other venomous animals where they will run rather than fight. They can't run in this moment. So they'll turn and just be as aggressive and scary
as possible.
So you leave them alone.
Like a cornered dog. I don't know.
Any animal that's cornered. You know, yeah. They can't move very quick. So that's one. What do you think of that?
I mean, I bet you that had to play some, if any actual sightings, you know, a swole snake, just a full, you know, full-bellied snake just laying there on the ground ready or can't do nothing. If someone stumbled across that. I mean, who knows? And you know the Tsuchinoko lore. It's like, heck yeah, that's a Tsuchinoko.
One that gets put up there a lot is a blue-tongued skink.
Wow. Okay.
They are the right size, and they come in a variety of colors. There's dozens of species. There's none native to Japan, but okay. They get right up to, like, in Indonesia. There's islands south of Japan that have blue-tongued skinks. They'll, you know, open their mouth, flash their big blue tongue. They have a big, wide, giant head, a little neck. Their legs are so tiny.
Yeah.
If they're overweight or even slightly too big, you won't be able to see their legs.
Okay.
They have a big, short, thick tail, and they have a big, round, rotund body.
Okay.
They can swim, but most of the time they stay at the surface. They have big eyes. They have this kind of big, round face. People say they look like they're smiling or happy, and a lot of the Tsuchinoko talk about that they look happy.
Yeah. I remember you saying that.
So that's one that gets pushed a lot. But then here's the big pushback against people why they don't think that. And I agree with them.
Is it the blue tongue?
That's one giant feature is that the Tsuchinoko sightings never report.
Right.
When its mouth is open, generally it can be colored. I've heard everything black, white, yellow. Blue, I've never heard.
Yeah. You think that would be a distinct feature?
You would know. Like
feature.
If anybody's been around a blue tongue skink, they are vibrant.
Blue.
Yeah.
Like
it's and that's the shock and awe feature. That's because it's such a rare color in nature.
You vary.
That all of a sudden this little lizard you're trying to eat, and they're not little, you know, they get up to 2.5 feet, 3 feet long. But let's say it's a fox or something trying to eat it, and they hop around and they swing at you, they leap at you.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden there's this giant blue piece of meat flashing at you.
Yeah.
It's a lot of new information for a predator to process. So most of the time predators back off. And they do have a pretty nasty bite. They're not venomous, but if they actually chomp down on you, they have pretty strong jaws. I've seen them pop snails and stuff eating it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I don't think they'll break your hand or nothing like that, but...
Break your skin.
It's going to suck.
Yeah.
So the first one is that it is a... I'm sorry. The tongue is the big, you know, pushback.
Right.
The other one is a lot of people say that they weren't very common... until the 1970s in the pet trade.
Okay.
Now, I'll push back on that again a little bit, because there's a thing, Japanese emperors, for example, and same with like a lot of emperors from around the world, held menageries. So platypus... Ew. What?
Oh, what's a menagerie?
It's like a zoo, a private zoo.
Oh, okay.
It's just, yeah. So platypus made their way into China, Rome, and Japan well before they were ever discovered.
Okay.
Due to people just trading and getting them, whether they were deceased or living individuals and putting them in menageries. We talked about the giraffes that ended up
in China.
In China.
Yeah.
With trade. So there's that the blue tongue skinks could have got there earlier and been released. And maybe there's a small population. They can be quite secretive in nature.
Maybe they lost their blue tongue.
They give live births. So they don't lay eggs.
And maybe they lost that blue tongue feature because it was a. Maybe something there ate the blue, like was attracted to it.
No, I don't think they lost their blue tongue.
Oh.
But that's just my pushback on the not till the 1970s. So we'll circle back to blue tongue skinks. Next one is, it's just an undiscovered species of snake. Japan does have some very, very popular rainforest. Still has some really good habitat. It's the home of a lot of mysterious animals,
yeah.
And cryptids. So this is one I could see. So a lot of one that push back is like the Asian hog nose snake, which has a big wide head.
Yeah.
They're burrowers. They don't really have this neck kind of feature. But what they'll do is they'll puff up and swell, lay flat. And so they look like a big cobra or a viper, which has a defense mechanism.
Well, that's
interesting. So let's say it's a cousin, and it's just look as big and as intimidating as you can, so they puff up.
Yeah.
A lot of snakes do that. So it could be. The barking and the squeaking and stuff like that. Snakes hiss. They don't have vocal cords. They don't have true vocal cords. But they can make all kinds of noises. Same with lizards. Blue-tongued skinks will kind of bark, kind of just, it's just releasing air, and it'll sound kind of weird. But it's a, you know, just a weird enough noise to kind of give you a little, like, what was that?
Right, yeah.
So I guess I didn't ask you, but what did you think about the blue-tongued skink idea?
I mean, I kind of agree with all the points you brought out. But my biggest thing, pushback on it too, was the blue tongue. That's when you first started talking about it. Just someone would have mentioned that somewhere along the line. If that's what, but a lot of the other characteristics do fit. And then with the snake one, yeah. I just, like I said at the beginning, it could be some kind of hoop snake, I thought. Like a species that we haven't really nailed down yet.
So there's not a lot of snakes that bite their own tail, or a Boris style.
No.
But there are a lot of lizards.
Uh-oh.
Specifically, skinks.
Yeah.
That do this.
Okay.
Everything from crocodiles, skinks. Blue-tailed skinks don't really do it. But a very little-known cousin does it. They are large, not quite as big as blue tongues, but they are, you know, they're fairly big. They have giant, robust, armor-plated scales.
Mm.
Their legs are almost invisible from the top. They have a bobbed tail. So the Tsuchinoko is reported having a tiny little short tail.
Yeah.
These guys have a bobbed tail, unlike the blue-tongued skink.
What's bobbed tail?
Like round. It's supposed to, okay. It's a second head.
Gotcha.
They have a little neck and a giant, wide, flat head. They have a big, smiling face. And in defensive mechanisms, they bite their tail and roll up in a ball. All Tsuchinoko behaviors.
Well, what kind of skink is it?
A shingle-backed lizard.
Oh, a shingle-backed lizard.
Or
all
a shingle-backed
right.
skink.
Let me get the old Google
I got pictures
up.
For you.
Okay.
There's your Tsuchinoko. It's even the right color.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that mean that's pretty thick.
Yeah. And they look like they're smiling. Now, they're from Australia. They're the bulkiest. They technically are blue-tongued lizards. They're a close cousin of the family group. They are common in the plains of the Great Dividing Ridge, where rainfall is low throughout the semi-arid habitats of inland Australia, as well as some coastal parts of Australia. There's several species of the shingle-backed lizard. They can be various colors. But this thing with the Tsuchinoko is these large plated scales that they talk about. And the shingleback has these large plated scales.
It sure does.
New South Wales, they're usually dark brown with yellow spots or no spots. The belly is normally pale with darker variations. Their eyes are small, reddish brown, gray. The tongue is extremely dark blue, and the lining of the mouth is bright pink. These guys don't often flash their tongue as much as true blue-tongued skinks. They rely on their armor-plated body and their fake head.
Yeah.
The shinglebacks have an extremely large head with a very short, blunt tail and a large, rough scales.
All the way from head to toe.
Males are reported being larger head and stockier bodies than females, and females grow slightly bigger than males.
Hmm.
Shinglebacks live in open country with lots of ground cover, such as tussocks grass or leaf litter. They shelter at night among leaf litter and ground rocks and stuff. Early morning, the lizards emerge to bask in sunny areas before foraging for food during the warmer parts of the day. Like all lizards, the shinglebacks do not produce their own body heat. They rely on the warmth of their surrounding area to rise their body temperature. Shinglebacks maintain a body temperature around 30 degrees Celsius to 35 degrees Celsius when active. During cold weather, they remain inactive, buried deep in their sheltered sites. But on sunny days, they will emerge and bask. Shinglebacks are common and widespread through New South Wales and the western slopes of the Great Dividing Ridge, but do not occur naturally in like areas like Sydney.
Mm.
And these guys eat anything.
Okay.
They're not picky. They eat animals and plants. They often, though, eat more plant food than other blue-tongued skink, like big skinks do. They're not very agile, so if they're catching anything, it has to be pretty slow-moving.
Right in their face.
Their teeth, though, are extremely large and can be mistaken for fangs.
Can they jump?
Now, they have extremely strong jaw muscles that they use to crush snail shells and beetles. Their captive diet feeds them 3 times within a week period. These consist of small feeds of, you know, chopped up vegetables, that kind of stuff, 2 cockroaches. Life cycle, female shinglebacks give birth to 3 to 5 months after mating between December and April in Australia. Their embryos develop in the female, and they basically give live birth, like all blue tongues do.
Mm.
But yeah, I think that some, at least the early Tsuchinoko sightings, and maybe even to this day, I think are shingleback skinks or shingleback lizards.
Now, can they live in that environment, I guess?
It depends. So I think that they were part of a menagerie collection because they are very common in the pet trade today.
Yeah.
These guys are super expensive. If you wanted to buy one, they're like $4,000 or $5,000.
Wow.
But when the people are first going to Australia for exotics, animals, yeah, they're common in, they were common in areas. Hmm. They very much look like, I mean, minus the legs on this picture, that's a Tsuchinoko.
Yeah, I can.
That's a drawing of a Tsuchinoko.
It fits the description. I mean,
and they will leap at you as like a defensive mechanism. They'll act like they bite.
And that short, stubby tail does look like it, like a head replica. That's kind of cool. Just the shape.
Yeah. So that's why they don't flash their mouth nearly as much as other skink species.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Because they don't want you to know which end's the head.
Right.
And they'll run backwards a little bit and stuff like that. Their whole thing is just to confuse predators.
Yeah.
They're very secretive, especially around people. A lot of people that live in Australia, where they're common, don't see them a whole lot compared to the other blue tongue species.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think there could be a population, or through the years they get released, and these could be the roots of the legend.
Of the legend, yeah.
I don't know if there's an actual population. They'd have to be in the southern parts of the ridge. But there's other skinks that do the tail biting thing. I mentioned crocodile skinks, which are black with spines, and they bite their tail, and they actually roll like a ball.
Okay.
And do this kind of behaviors. Everything about the Tsuchinoko is describing a large skink species.
By its behavior. And
then there's a whole other thing where it could be a cryptic skink species, where it's an actual species of skink. There are species of skink in Japan
that we haven't, I guess, put in the books yet.
Yes, that they are low fecundity, very rare. Japan has all kinds of stuff. Like, we're going to do a full episode on Japanese wolves, whether they're still there or not.
Okay.
Where people, wolves. People still aren't sure if there's wolves or not still there.
Yeah, that's kind of wild.
Let alone a...
Didn't they make a game about a Japanese wolf or something?
I have no idea.
Okay. I feel like they did.
But where there's these skinks, could, you know, whether it's this species of skink, a shingleback, a close cousin, there are other big armor-plated skinks like this. But when I was reading this about the Tsuchinoko, all I could think is, that's a shingleback skink. Like, everything about it sounds like a shingleback skink. This, like, big, robust body.
Wait, did you answer the question, can they jump?
Yeah, kind of. They'll leap.
Okay.
And, you know, we talk about with all cryptids, is this can be exaggeration.
For sure, yeah.
Where, especially when you're scared, right?
Oh, yeah.
And they're flying, you know, they're just, you don't know what this animal is. And, or you do know it's a Tsuchinoko and you're scared, you know, you've heard the legends, and then it leaps at you.
It's true.
You're like, ah!
Turning and running. You've seen what you've seen.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I really feel like the Tsuchinoko is a skink. Whether it's a shingleback skink or maybe originally was menageried shingleback skinks. Like the Chinese Kirin was a giraffe that they called it, this horse dragon creature. Where it's just, you know, it's a powerful animal.
I think you definitely made a case for the skink, that's for sure.
And Japan's history and folklore has a long-standing tradition of mixing the flesh and blood with the mythical.
Yeah.
Where a lot of animals, like the giant Japanese salamander, took on, I believe, the kappa role, where the kappa was the giant Japanese salamander. Sure, you know, at their full size, they probably could snatch a small kid.
Yeah.
Whether they eat them or not, they definitely probably could drown one. You get a 100-pound salamander that bites a hold of you, and it's home in the water.
Right,
but this big flat
you're a
head,
little kid.
And they just take on their own life after that with the mythical properties, especially reclusive animals or hidden animals. Because shinglebacks are famous, in the outback at least, of being hard to spot if they're not walking.
Okay.
Because when they look like rocks.
Yeah, they blend right in.
Or, you know, there's pine cone skinks. There's other species of skink. Your shingleback is what I'm using for this example.
Yeah.
Seriously, guys at home, look it up. Look at pictures of the Tsuchinoko. And there are pictures of the Tsuchinoko.
Like actual photographs?
Yeah, like Bigfoot, you know.
Yeah.
Where it's blurry, it's hard to see, but there's an animal in those pictures.
Right.
And it looks like a picture of a skink. Their legs are so tiny.
You might be onto something here. And what if, like, okay, let's say the shingleback skinks did make it up there and they still, like, established, like, the emus in Michigan?
Mm-hmm.
Who's to say they
didn't? Which is another Australian wildlife.
Yeah, exactly. They're spreading everywhere. What if they just didn't develop, like, smaller legs, you know, over time? Sure. Or whatever characteristics to survive in that environment.
And it didn't have to be, like, once again, the shingleback. It just...
Right.
That's the one I would just point to. There are other species of skink that... handle cold. We have species in here in Ohio that are fine. There's a bunch of species in Japan of smaller species of skink. So it could be just a convergent evolution or a cousin, where skinks are famous for island hopping.
Or what if the skink took on the niche of another animal, you know, filled its niche and, you know, I don't know, it swelled up.
I'm all for it. I mean, I really think the Tsuchinoko is real, at least historically. Now it's so hard to tell because, like, the kappa... it's gained a fandom.
What do you mean Kappa is real? Kappa is real.
No. I didn't say it wasn't real.
Oh, okay.
I said it's gained a fandom, so it's really hard to research is what I was getting at.
Oh, I see.
Because there's so much Tsuchinoko, like, art and festivals, and not in a bad way, but there's cartoons and there's backpacks and there's... So when you're looking at it from American internet, I guess, you get a lot of that.
It's blending the fun stuff with... the actual stories.
Yeah,
the folklore.
It's hard to pull it apart.
Yeah,
and look at it because it's like I got probably the 10 or 5 pages of Tsuchinoko backpack keychains.
Nice,
they call them in Japan.
Did you order a couple at least?
Yeah,
They're on their way.
Yeah, they're on their way.
The studio.
Mm-hmm.
You ever want to send us anything or like a Tsuchinoko keychain?
I think they're really cool. I think the Tsuchinoko is really cool.
You can do it at PO Box 75,
8 Ohio. If you want to send us anything,
yeah, it's in the description below.
We haven't mentioned that a lot. And also leave a 5-star review. We
haven't mentioned that a lot either. Yeah, I guess anyone listening, if it's your first time listening, welcome to the Crypts of the Corn podcast. Or if you've been listening for a minute, if we're fairly new to you, and you haven't left a review or a comment, does help our show grow. It's about the best and the easiest way and the freest way you can support us. So, just leave us a 5-star review on Apple and... you know, if it we'll read it off too as well. We like reading off the reviews, and it's been a while since we've done that because we haven't had a review in a while because we really haven't mentioned it in a while.
It's our fault. So we've been so busy.
So get on there, leave 5-star review, and then hop on over to flavorsforce.com/corn and get you some garlic dust for Christmas.
I guess I'll throw this in here just for anybody. We do officially have land. Was signed as a recording this yesterday.
Yes.
We have a house back on the land. The homestead is happening.
Started.
Yes. The process is started. It's going good. So thank you. I know there's been a lot of support. A lot of people sending stuff, comments and that kind of stuff. I just wanted to give that, you know. Emily is documenting everything, pictures and all that. She is waiting until it's a little more finalized to post the pictures.
Yeah.
She's just worried about people going back there before we're back there.
Yeah, I don't blame her.
So it's nothing with even you guys that, you know... but it's more locals, just because there's a lot of money tied up into stuff.
Yeah, we'll figure out. We'll post them on Discord.
Oh, we have. We've been doing that.
Join our Patreon, get access to our Discord, and you can see all the updates and pictures and all the comments and all that fun
good
stuff.
Good Patreon plug.
Yeah.
Good Patreon
plug. Well, I mean, it's the only way you can get on Discord.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I've been the great and powerful Tsuchinoko, Mr. E.
Whoa. And I've been J-Clone 61.
All right.
Bye.
Hey guys, thank you for listening to Crypts of the Corn podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the J clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on cryptidsofthecorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye.